is the Lombardi Line with Scorey Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The Stanley Cup will be in the building again tonight, but can the Panthers regain momentum on the road to raise it up? Meanwhile, in Boston, it's parade day for the Celtics winning their NBA title. J.J. Redick has been named the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, and we've got plenty of NFL news and notes today. So, needless to say, jam-packed Friday edition of the Lombardi Line alongside Mike Palm, Stormy Bonantoni with you. And I don't know if you can tell, but I'm basically in the female version of a Canadian tuxedo today, so I am ready for hockey.
But not, it's just denim, not denim on denim.
But it's like, it's a dress, so it's basically like the pants and shirt, right? It's all in one, all encompassing.
You're ready. Everybody who has Florida futures, sweating hard now.
Yes.
After it looked like they were going to be possibly a sweep, a historic team, and now the last seven periods, what a dramatic change of a series. From a betting perspective, I really firmly believe that Florida's best chance is to win it tonight. They need to win it tonight. You see the psychology of pressure and expectations. You know, they get up 3-0. Both NBA and NHL throwaway games four, right? Although it's one thing in the NBA because you can pull your starters down 20. You got a goaltender gives up 4 or 5 goals on the way to get beat 8-1. It may mess with his head. And then in front of all the family and friends and the expectations that you're going to win the cup on home ice in game five, and you start out the worst way possible. You couldn't have scripted a worse goal to give up than a shorthanded breakaway goal. And then Bobrovsky gives up the second. I mean, they'd only had 6 shots by the time he gave up this, and it was over, I thought, at that point for sure, at 2-0. Now, all the momentum is with Edmonton. All the storyline is McDavid. Is he the greatest ever and the greatest playoffs ever? Greatest series ever. 4 points, 2 games in a row. And the expectations are flying high as they head to Edmonton. An extra day of rest for Bobrovsky. You brought this up many times before the series, what his numbers are off the extra day of rest. It didn't help in game five, but historically over the long run, he's played very well with the extra day of rest. And really the expectations are Edmonton sends this back to South Florida for game seven. I think they can play looser tonight, Florida, and I think they will win the cup tonight. If they lose tonight, if you have Florida futures, you must bet Edmonton in game seven to get off of them. The good thing is they're probably going to still be a plus price. We saw them a heavy favorite again in game five. It won't be that, but I think Florida will still be around $1.25, $1.30 in game seven at home. I would bet Edmonton at that point. So that's my thoughts on tonight's game. Since a Florida future, I'm going to lay off and hope they win this game tonight. I'm not going to lay the price with Edmonton tonight. As far as my Conn Smythe tickets go, I think I played it as well as I could, and I'm going to lose on both ends.
Unbelievable.
Bobrovsky's back to where he was a month ago at 9-1, and I sprinkled on Barkov. I don't think he can. I think Bobrovsky actually has a better shot to win this than Barkov does. If let's say they go to Edmonton and they win 2-1 tonight or 3-1, and he has a great game again like game one, I still think he has a shot. But right now, I would say win or lose, McDavid is going to win this.
So that's what I was going to ask you, because we've seen this number continue to get bet up. Like prior to game five, Connor McDavid was plus 750. He's minus 150 immediately following the game, has 8 points in 2 games. No player has ever done that in Stanley Cup final history over any 2-game span. He's minus 200 yesterday, minus 220 this morning, now up to minus 275 at DraftKings. So it feels like people that are betting this market think it has to be Connor McDavid regardless of outcome. I listened to the 32 Thoughts podcast with Elliot Friedman, one of those NHL insiders, and he said for him, he's not a voter, but he talks to a lot of voters. And the way that Connor McDavid is being talked about in the series, because of historically the numbers that he is doing, he beats Wayne Gretzky's assist record for the postseason. He's third in points, and he's probably going to get over that mark with Gretzky. He's three points back of Gretzky's overall record. He's doing historic things, so it makes sense that history could be made in this market as well, that only one other skater that was from the opposing team that ultimately lost the Stanley Cup did win. It was in the 70s. But could Connor McDavid, because of the greatness that he has displayed in this series and willing his team to win, getting them out of this 3-0 deficit, it feels like it has to be him. But I get scared just because, like I said, historically, voters have not done that in the past. So is there still a chance that should Florida win tonight that it goes to a Florida player?
I think there's a chance, but I think it's a better chance it's Bobrovsky. if he has a really good game with a shutout, or maybe he gives up one goal, he still will have played great in four of the games, and there are four wins.
Well, and a lot of the big stuff about Barkov, right, was how good defensively that he had been against McDavid. That's gone now.
I think Barkov's out the window here. I think the plus 370 is wrong. I think that Bobrovsky should be the second choice right now. Now, Jonathan Davis, who we've had on this program, he's been on many VSiN programs.
He'll be on with us an hour or two as well.
Texted Mitch Moss, and we can ask him about this, that before the final started, there were places that had markets of a double result where team to win and Conn Smythe. And Panthers win, but McDavid and Conn Smythe was offered. Have you heard him say this yet? So what price do you think, what price would you have needed to take? Because I know the answer, but what price would you have needed to take on that bet that the Panthers win the series, but McDavid is the Conn Smythe winner?
Long. I mean, over 20 to 1.
Yeah, it was 10 to 1, which I don't think was a good bet at all. No. Now, of course, if you
but now you're like, oh, I would have killed for 10 to 1. But you would have thought on the surface.
It's way too short.
No way,
because, like you said, a skater on a losing team.
Correct. Interesting. In terms of the total tonight, we're sitting 5.5. It started the series. The first couple games were under games. It looked like that could be a trend throughout because Bobrovsky was playing so well. The dams obviously broke in that 8-1 game. We have had three straight overs now with 7-plus goals scored in each. Any gut feeling for how this goes tonight total-wise?
Paul Howard played the second period over 1.5 because that's where the first periods have still been pretty tight, right, and cashing the unders. But the second periods have had 5-4 and 3 goals in the last three games. So you have to lay the price. But Paul, instead of playing the 5.5, played the second period over tonight. I still think the first periods are good under bets because there is a feeling out there. That first goal is so key. And nobody wants to make a mistake, right, and give up the first goal. And then to have it happen, as I said, when you're on the power play was brutal.
So that's the thing. So we know how good Edmonton's penalty kill is, right? It's like 93.9% in the postseason. They've been unbelievable. The fact back-to-back games, though, that they've scored shorthanded is unbelievable. And that first goal, as you referenced last game, where it's just an ugly pass on the blue line that goes the other way, the Panthers on the power play look so disconnected. I would rather them play 5-on-5. Like, I don't even want you guys on the power play at this point because it just has not looked effective.
Yeah, it's almost more of a weapon for Edmonton to be on the penalty.
Yeah, it gives them momentum in the game.
It gives them momentum in the game. They finally solved it right at the end of game two. They broke, and they were close to setting the all-time record for consecutive penalty kills. That would have been Anaheim, I believe, 06 of 38. They finally solved it. But again, after that, the PK's gone back to being dominant for Edmonton.
So I do have a question there when it comes to for this Panthers team, like Bobrovsky in general, do you feel like Edmonton is in his head at this point? Is this something that he can overcome and get back to the guy that he was? Because he stopped 78 of 80 shots that came his way the first 8 periods of this series. Since the start of the third period in game 3, he's allowed 11 goals on 45 shots. No team in cup final history has won a cup after their goalie has given up 4-plus goals in consecutive games.
That's a great stat, Stormy. I think it goes to how the game starts out, and it's key to get the first goal tonight, I think, for Florida. I thought early in the series it didn't matter because they will just keep coming and keep coming.
Well, and they've been able in the postseason to come back in games.
One down, two down. It hasn't mattered to them. But I think now because of what's happened the last two games, it's important for them to get to the lead and get into that mind frame that they're going to shut down this potent attack from the Oilers.
We'll get back to the NHL at the end of this hour. Adam Kimmelman, editor at NHL.com, will give us his thoughts on the series. As you referenced in hour two, we'll have Jonathan Davis of SiriusXM NHL Network Radio join us, get his best bets and thoughts as well. But real quickly, last couple minutes of this opening segment, the big news yesterday broke literally 3 minutes after we got off the air here on the Lombardi Line. J.J. Redick has signed a 4-year contract to be the next head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. Been rumored for a while, ultimately comes to fruition. He is immediately now working on a staff that has experience because he quite frankly has none. We did expect this, but what do you think of the hire?
I think they're taking a shot. They're taking a swing here. It's not a conventional hire, but the conventional hires haven't worked for the Lakers. I don't know how much he's tied to LeBron with the podcast and how does that sit with the rest of the players. Is that going to have a lingering effect on him? The best thing I've seen out of all this was a tweet by Fran Fraschilla, which was an advice to J.J. Redick tweet as someone who has no experience. And it was an 8-part tweet of 8 things to focus on, right? And a lot of it's about, you know, surrounding your staff with guys with experience at the NBA level. But getting your practice routine down, your game situation routine down, your timeout theories down, all these routines and rituals, your pregame, all this stuff down. And I thought it was really good. And I think Frischel is the best college basketball analyst out there right now. But the funny tweet someone put in reply, God, friend, it's not like they hired Stephen A. Smith, the guy played a decade in the league, yeah. and sees the game through a point guard's eyes. It'll be interesting, right? I mean, the Lakers have now become a play-in franchise, right? I mean, Correct. That's what they're shooting for every year is getting a play-in.
Well, so for me, and I've heard other people say this as well, but watching the Lakers this past season or the last couple, it doesn't feel like coaching necessarily was the issue. It's the team. It's the personnel. There's a lot of things in addition to coaching that has been a problem for this team. They won that bubble title that everybody puts the asterisk next to for a reason. Like, where do you feel the state of the Lakers is at?
I think LeBron is tough. I think he's, you know, an all-time great player. I'm not sure he's on my starting five all-time if I had to pick by position, but he's very...
That's a big statement.
I'd have Magic at the one and Michael at the two. He's so controlling, right? And he has so much influence over that. I don't know if Jeannie Buss and Rob Pelinka are calling the shots anymore. It's very interesting when after Jerry West passing, how he stepped away and why he stepped away, and then how bitter he was with the Lakers after he left. And there's a whole history there, but good luck to Redick and the Lakers. See if they can turn it around. Oh,
no question about it. Meanwhile, the Boston Celtics are celebrating their NBA title today. The duck boats are out, and they are a +290 favorite to repeat next year. We're going to take a break. When we come back, diving into the latest headlines in the NFL with news or noise, separating the impactful from the insignificant next.
Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you like watching and listening to VSiN, don't forget about all the great betting tools and content at VSiN.com. We got best bets from hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips, trends, and betting news. And with the College World Series final beginning tomorrow between Texas A&M and top seed Tennessee, Aaron Moore's got a breakdown for how best to approach the best of three set. Plus, the Stanley Cup final rolls on tonight. VSiN NHL expert Johnny Lazarus has a pair of articles up on how he's betting the game from a side and prop perspective. Will the Florida Panthers clinch their first cup in franchise history tonight? That Game 6 preview live now on VSiN.com.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise. This is noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News? Or noise.
All right, Mike, time for a little news or noise. Trevor Lawrence spoke to the media for the first time since officially inking his new deal, telling reporters this Jags team is definitely the best he's had there, adding, quote, in my eyes, at this point in the year from what I've seen, I feel very confident in that. News or noise, it's the best Jags team Trevor Lawrence says he's been a part of.
Well, they just paid him $250 million. What's he going to say? We're going to struggle this year? I think this is totally noise. I think there's nothing to be drawn from this, and it's very hyperbolic. This is the best team since he's been there. I don't know. They finished the year with quite a struggle. We'll see. They've gone from being, you know, -$2 to win that division to being the third choice.
Yeah, they were an odds-on favorite last year to start the year, but here we are now. He also said he's not putting any added pressure on himself since tying Joe Burrow for the largest average annual value salary. But shouldn't there be a little? Sure. Shouldn't you want a little bit of that pressure on you when you were in that contract?
Don't you think there was pressure on Cousins when he signs the deal?
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course there is. The problem with this kid is the expectations out of college. He's never going to be able to match those, right? He's always going to be seen as disappointing unless he wins multiple Super Bowls.
But he's still given the benefit of the doubt. Otherwise, you don't get a contract like that.
Yeah, they're still waiting. He's got a long, long leash. Long leash.
Justin Fields, another young quarterback, reportedly struggled during the Steelers offseason program, according to The Athletic's Mark Cabali, putting Russell Wilson on his list of offseason winners and Fields on his list of offseason losers. News or noise, anything to glean from that?
I don't know what was expected here, that Fields was going to compete for the job. I mean, certainly the Steelers would hope that he'd be an able backup if something happened to Russell. I mean, he was a starting quarterback for the Bears for 4 years. But he's never going to start. I don't care if he's dazzled them and Russell looked terrible. You have to start Russell Wilson because there's no going back. Once you bench Russell Wilson, it's over. You might as well release him. you know. So I don't know that there was any result but this happening. So is it a loser because he hasn't grasped the system or he hasn't looked great and everybody thinks he has a high potential? Maybe, but I would call this noise as well.
An interesting part of it. And like, obviously, he's not getting first team reps at this point. The quote that Mike Tomlin has used this whole time is Russell Wilson in pole position. But we anticipate he's going to be the starting quarterback right away. But Cabali wrote here, you can see what made Fields a first round pick. Also what made the Bears move on. The arm strength, speed and playmaking with his legs are undeniable. However, he struggled with accuracy and was very inconsistent. Relied on his feet way too quickly after the first read. And so stuff that can be fixed, but not quickly.
The problem with Fields is he takes too long to read. His drop back and pass time is a second and a half too slow. You have to be able to read the defense and get to your second option. If you can't fix that, I don't think he can be a winning quarterback.
Have you seen, I can't remember who posted it, but it was a former player, posting these videos of Justin Fields passing to receivers and the receivers just like, get to their spot, turn around, and they're waiting there like a full beat or two beats before the ball gets there. So I think like that timing is a big part of it as well with the reads.
I don't think he's ever going to be that accurate. But you got to be able to read quicker to give yourself more of a cushion. I mean, if you go back to the national championship game against Alabama, he missed a couple wide open throws that would have made that game much more competitive.
You would have thought with all the time that he's had now as a starting quarterback that some of those things would have been cleaned up with the reps in NFL action, but we just haven't really seen it yet. Also, while we're on the Steelers, Cam Hayward posted to his social media that the goal is to be a Steeler the rest of his career, see if they can figure out their contract issues. Let's go to San Francisco, where tight end George Kittle, who typically measures in at 6'4", 250, said on the Bussin' with the Boys podcast this past week he lost 30 pounds during the offseason while recovering from core muscle surgery and other injuries. He said, I couldn't lift, I couldn't do any upper body because of my shoulder and rib. I couldn't do any lower body because of my core surgery. I didn't lift from the Super Bowl until almost mid-March, when a month without doing a thing, and I wasn't supposed to do anything, my anxiety levels were very high. He also said that he is trying to add at least 10 more pounds before they get to the regular season. News or noise that probably the best blocking tight end in the NFL dropped 30 pounds.
I think that's news, because he's not going to be able to get back that before they start the season. I think it's 10 before we get to training camp. So I think it has a factor on them early on if you want to handicap the 49ers. Now you'll have to go out and see if he can operate. But to your point, I mean, it's a lot about that run game and what he does in that run game blocking. It's tough. You're going to lose 30 pounds. You're going up guys that were bigger than you already.
Mm-hmm. Sticking with San Francisco, wide receiver.
Ayuk still.
Yep. He's taken his contract negotiations to TikTok. I just haven't heard your opinion on this. Told his former ASU teammate, now Commanders quarterback Jaden Daniels, that the 49ers, quote, don't want me back. And we do have the clip for you. Here you go.
What? They said they don't want me back. I swear.
At first, when I saw this video, I thought, did his girlfriend post this? And no, it's from his account with the caption, I'm laughing, but I'm crying for real. News or noise?
Well, the girlfriend, I thought it was the wife, but the girlfriend was the one right after the Super Bowl already saved. They were going by Levi's Stadium saying the last time he won't be back and all this, right after the Super Bowl, like 2 days after the Super Bowl. I mean, it's ridiculous. Do you think that he helps himself in this?
I am of the belief, like, I don't understand in general why players think that this social media outlet for their frustrations and contract negotiations actually works as leverage. I feel like, if anything, you're creating a disconnect more broad between you and the team. I don't like it. I'm not a fan of it, but that's the day and age that we live in, and it's all commonplace. Well, I think Klay Thompson unfollowed the Warriors last week because he thinks that it's going to work for him.
This, whatever we've come up with here, is still not as bad as Stafford's wife this week.
That's not even new. She said that for,
really?
Like, I've heard that.
Well, that's why she's so freely saying it, then. It's not news. That it's already known.
It's not new, but it's getting, like, blown up even more this week.
He wants to renegotiate his contract in light of the quarterback market.
Let's throw that in, shall we? According to NFL Network's Ian Rappaport, Rams quarterback Matthew Stafford wants his contract adjusted. News or noise?
That's noise, but it's interesting. I mean, I'm glad he bounced back healthy. I didn't know he was ever going to play again. He had a decent year last year. When you signed the contract you signed, what's he going to do, sit out at his age? He's got no outs.
36 years old. Oh, by the way, for the Brandon Ayuk stuff, Adam Schefter this morning on the Pat McAfee show did say, and Michael Lombardi, quite frankly, said as much yesterday on the show when we discussed this topic, the 49ers absolutely want Brandon Ayuk back, just not at the price he's seeking. They've always wanted him back. They were never serious about trading him. They're trying to win a Super Bowl, and they're not looking to move on. The 49ers, by the way, 6-1, second shortest shot to win the Super Bowl this year, behind only the Kansas City Chiefs, who, of course, beat them last year. Let's go out to Washington. And the quarterback, by the way, who Ayuk was just talking to on the phone, Commanders head coach Dan Quinn said Jaden Daniels is further along than he probably should be. News or noise?
Well, I'm going to say, you know, you read into what the coach is trying to say. It's like the opposite of Salah, who throws everybody under the bus. But I think that's good news, because I think Washington is a high variance team based on what he does this year. And obviously, he was the human first down at LSU and ran away with the Heisman. I think he's going to have a good pro career. Can he stay healthy at his size, because he's going to run around? I don't know. But I think he can make an immediate impact on this team. And I think this team will be better than the Giants, right? I look at markets where you can bet teams win totals against each other, or bet the exact order in the division, the four order. I think this is a division where you can go Eagles, Cowboys, Commanders, and then Giants pretty confidently. I think that there's a separation there.
With Daniels and Caleb Williams, do you find it interesting, or is it newsworthy or not, that Caleb Williams, right away, Eberflus came out and said he's going to be our starting quarterback, and that Dan Quinn and the Commanders did not do that? I mean, he's getting first-team reps, obviously. We all anticipate him to be the guy, but that he didn't put that stamp of approval on him?
I don't know if you need the stamp of approval. I mean, Caleb's the number one guy, and he's supposed to be, what, another generational guy like Lawrence? I think that was a given.
Those are working out well, very well, by the way.
And maybe, yeah, and maybe there's some psychology to give him the confidence. I think Daniels has to earn it. I don't think there's anything wrong with the dichotomy of how the two coaches handled it.
Okay. Last one here. Broncos hire ex-Stanford head coach David Shaw as a senior personnel executive. So Sean Payton bringing in Shaw.
I thought he was going to be a game manager and advised to kick all those 19-yard field goals like he did at Stanford. What a great coach for the under. I miss David Shaw. No, they have an 8-minute drive and kick a field goal every time. It's beautiful for under players.
That's too funny.
David Shaw was very good at Stanford.
Stanford, soon to be ACC power.
it's crazy, right? Those matchups with Wake Forest will be classics.
It's going to be so weird. That's something like we talked more college football this week than we typically do, kind of shifting gears a little bit in the dog days of summer. And looking at the realignment for the Big 12 specifically over the last 2 years, how different that league looks from top to bottom. Some of the teams that are in the ACC, SMU, Stanford. Oh, all right. We'll figure it out. We're going to hit the break when we come back. We're also changing it up a little bit today with Mike Palm on the program. We got baseball to discuss next. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Get excited. In less than a week, we're releasing our VSiN NFL betting guide, your ultimate resource for the football season, jam-packed with detailed team, division, and conference analysis, and of course, best bets for the year. To get the guide, though, you must be a VSiN Pro subscriber, and right now, you can sign up for an annual subscription for just $199. That's down from our regular price of $240. Plus, when you use the promo code Lombardi, we're throwing in an extra month absolutely free. With a VSiN Pro subscription, you'll get exclusive access to premium analysis, expert picks, and advanced betting tools that'll give you an upper hand all year long. Don't miss out, though. This is your chance to sign up and save ahead of the season. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe now. Use that promo code Lombardi to claim your discount and bonus month. Again, VSiN.com/subscribe. Promo code Lombardi. And we'll get back to the NFL in a little bit. Usually here on the Lombardi Line, we talk baseball, Mike, I would say, approximately 2 cumulative minutes a week. So this is your time to shine. Give us all the information, everything you need. I'm excited to have this talk with you. By the way, how cool was the showing last night in Birmingham?
I thought it was awful.
You didn't like it?
I thought the broadcast was awful.
What was so bad about it?
It was very... First of all, the game was played out to be so long with all the interruptions and different things going on. I don't know why we had to spend a whole half inning in black and white with no center field camera view. People are betting on this stuff. You can't tell where the pitches are. You can't tell what he's throwing. I get it. Do it for one batter. The whole half inning. The pregame stuff was great. Reggie Jackson was unbelievable.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Really focusing on, instead, you know, They're celebrating. He's also bringing the reality of what happened.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was one of the things that for me, just watching some stuff yesterday, and like I watched a little bit of the game live, but most of the things I saw were coming through on social media afterwards. And like that clip of him sharing what he experienced was unbelievable. And then you think about all the stuff surrounding Willie Mays, that it turns into not only a celebration of the Negro Leagues, but a celebration of everything that he did in the sport with his passing this week. There was a lot of things, at least that I saw, that were highlighted that were really well done.
Yeah, there were the idea of the game, terrific. I just thought the Fox broadcast was bad. The graphic was hard to read.
You are a very critical, like, I'm not eye critical when it comes to broadcast.
Sean McDonough, again, he gets lambasted. I don't get this. Yeah. The McDonough hate. It's ridiculous. It really is. I'm sorry. And there are guys that are, you could argue, are better than him, but he does a very good job. And, you know, they want to say it's not his sport, you know, he shouldn't be on hockey and all that. I think he does a fine job. I just have to say that because I'm critical of the time, but I don't think he's doing a poor job. I didn't like the graphic was a tough graphic to read throughout the game. I just found it hard from an eye of somebody who's also betting these games to follow that game the way they did the broadcast. And I kind of felt bad for Smoltz. But the idea was great. And the takeaway is the Reggie Jackson moment. So if we had to sit through a bad broadcast to get that, I'm okay with it.
Any games you like today, looking at the slate? 14 games coming up. Just one day game coming up in about an hour. Everything else at night.
Yeah, but it's Shota Imanaga, who's still been terrific for the Cubs.
Yes.
Right? Still a Cy Young candidate, taking on the Mets. I thought this line's a little bit cheap. Cubs coming off two wins in a row, 145. I didn't play it, but I'd look at the Cubs here. I played two games today, Stormy. I bet the Mariners on the overnight with Kirby going against Trevor Rogers and the Marlins. Trevor Rogers is 1-9 with an ERA over 5. I laid 160 last night. It's up to 170 here at Circa. The other game is I played Kansas City and Texas under 4.5 the first five, minus 120. That's Singer against Evoldi. Those are the two plays that I've already made. Now, I might add some stuff later tonight, but that's where I'm at for now.
What have you thought? I mean, just to go back to the one-day game that we have coming up in a little bit, Mets and underdog at the Cubs. Like, the Mets obviously really struggled early on in the year, but they've gone through a really nice stretch lately. But Imanaga's so good. 7-1, I believe, like third in ERA right now in Major League Baseball.
So if you'd look at these two teams, right, you'd think, well, the Cubs are a lot better than the Mets. They're even in the state. I mean, the Cubs are percentage points a bit above them because they played two more games and they're 1-1. The Mets are 35-38. Cubs are 36-39. So, I mean, there's nothing really separating the records. The Mets have been so bad in stretches that you just think they're an awful team, but they're not. But I look at the pitching matchup and I think, boy, it's such an advantage and pitching at home for Imanaga. He hasn't had any bad starts at home. I just think that's still cheap at 145.
And it was, I was like, I see minus 155 right now, at least on DraftKings Sportsbook, which this morning it was around minus 140. So clearly people agree with you playing on the Cubs here early. We're not quite at the midpoint of the season yet. Still plenty of baseball to go. And as somebody like myself who, like I said, we don't talk about it a lot on the show. I don't grind this sport out day in and day out like you do. But going through the standings, I couldn't even help but notice the parity in the National League right now is pretty striking, for better or worse. There's only four teams that are over 500. Phillies, Dodgers, Brewers, Braves. Meanwhile, the next nine teams are separated by just two games. From a betting perspective, is that a good thing for us, that there's more options potentially to bet in the NL?
There's a lot of options in the will they make the playoff race, because like everybody's two games under 500, to your point, right? And they kind of sit there at 500, four games under, and they go back and forth. When Justin put this together and say, look at future bets, there's actually like three teams in the National League at plus prices that I like, that I think have decent shots to make the playoffs. I still think how about the Padres with the Circa walk-off special, where we do this, we give this, you know about this promotion we do? It's the Circa walk-off special. Anytime the Padres walk it off, we pick, it's a sweepstakes. They enter, you know, they scan the code at the Padres at Petco. I think there's around 9,000 people in it that have done it. So you get a trip for two to Circa. You get airfare. We pay your airfare from San Diego to Las Vegas. The limo picks you up. You get a suite for three nights. Dinner comped at Andiamo. You get, I think, $1,000 credit at Stadium Swim for a cabana, Legacy Club, all this stuff. So last year in the entire season, the Padres had two walk-offs. They had one in May, And then their last three games have been walk-offs.
Okay.
Two against the A's, and then they come off the road trip, and they do it again last night with the Cronenworth home run. So three consecutive games they've hit.
That's so cool.
Ruined the whole second quarter for our, for our company. Ruined it all.
What a cool thing to do, to put together, though. I was going to ask you real quickly. I don't want to get too sidetracked, but what initially inspired the deal with San Diego? Because obviously it's legalization in California isn't there, but it's a short drive up the road to San Diego, or for
it's
fans
a drivable market
down
for us.
Here, yeah.
And we're trying to attract people to the property as well, not just sports bettors. And the Padres have become so popular lately with these, you know, they've went out and spent money and got stars. And it's a place to be now. Petco is a great hangout place. That
for
whole
sure.
We love to go down and hang out in the gas lamp district, right? It's awesome. San Diego, they don't call it America's finest city for no reason. I mean, it's beautiful to be down there. We think it's a good partnership, and it's a good demographic to draw people from Orange County and from San Diego that are Padre fans up to the area. I would look at three teams in the National League that are plus prices to make the playoffs now, and it's probably not smart to bet all three of them, but I would look at the Padres at plus 170. I would look at the Reds at plus 320, and then I still think the Pirates, they're 5-1 with these three young pitchers and – you know, Skeens is continuing to get better with every start. If they can get enough production from the hitting and Derek Shelton can make a few more better decisions, I think, trying to generate runs, I think they're still alive in that division. That division is just like everybody's bunched together, and it's the Brewers, right? And will the Brewers come back to the pack, or who will emerge as the wild card teams here? So it's interesting. I know the D-backs are still in it. They've played better lately. The Nats are interesting because their price is so long, 13-1. I mean, you can get them out there 150-1, 200-1 to win the World Series. They've played better. But you're right. It's a very interesting betting market because all these teams are – there's like eight teams within three games of each other in the wild card race in the National League.
A ton of parity at the top, it feels like. Last couple minutes here, what about in the American League side of things?
Feels to me like Yankees-Orioles. I'm trying to get myself convinced on Seattle. I'm trying to get can Seattle make a run? And we've seen some people betting – betting Seattle.
What would it take to convince you, I guess? Why are you leaning that way?
I need to see a little more, a higher on-base percentage from the top of their lineup. The guys that are their home run hitters can't hit 15 and 20 home runs this year. They need to get back up into the 30 to 35 range. The starting pitching staff is deep. There may not be a real Castillo. Kirby's kind of come into his own a little bit. I think Logan Gilbert might turn out to be the best of them all. Hasn't been a guy that stepped up and was like, I'm the ace. But they go pretty much five deep, and you're going to get consistent pitch. I think they went, 15 games in a row where the starters gave up two earned run or less at one point this year. So the pitching's there. But right now the Yankees and the Orioles are a cut above everybody else. I'm not there on the Guardians yet.
Any concerns with New York on the injury front?
A little bit. I think the pitching...
I know it was good to see that with Judge it wasn't anything significant recently, so that was
significant.
A sigh of relief.
I'm glad to see Gerrit Cole came back and pitched well. That's a big addition. Now, who are they going to take out of the rotation? I said, ridiculous. David Cohn suggested Louis Heal, who's your favorite for American League Rookie of the Year and like fifth in the Cy Young one. He got hammered yesterday by Baltimore, but I certainly wouldn't take Heal out. I might take a look at Nestor Cortez and turning him into a long reliever, but... we'll see. I still think they're the best two teams. Big series in Houston this weekend, I think, between the O's and the Astros. Houston trying to get some momentum, try to climb their way back to 500 and make themselves relevant again.
All right, you hear that music. We got to take a commercial break. When we return, we'll get back to the Cup Final. The Oilers' 13 goals when facing elimination this series are the second most in Stanley Cup Final history, behind only the 1942 Maple Leafs, who were the lone team in the Stanley Cup Final to come back from down three games to none. We'll see if the Edmonton Oilers can do it themselves. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Even in the offseason, the GM Shuffle podcast is a must-listen for any and every football fan. Hear our guy, Michael Lombardi, former NFL executive, give his unfiltered opinion on players, teams, and coaching decisions every Monday and Thursday throughout the course of the year. Right now, he and Femi are doing an interview series. They've had Phil Sims on the pod, Chris Ballard this past week. Download and subscribe to the GM Shuffle podcast from VSiN and DraftKings today, wherever you get your podcasts. alongside Mike Palm, Stormy Bonantoni with you live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. The Florida Panthers were up 3-0 in the Stanley Cup Final, but have since been outscored 15-4 their last 7 periods of hockey. Can Edmonton avoid elimination again tonight, or will the Florida Panthers finally close it out and win their first Stanley Cup in franchise history? To help us break it all down, we welcome to the show Adam Kimmelman on the Progressive Guest Line, Deputy Managing Editor for NHL.com. You can follow him on X at NHL Adam K. Adam, okay, how have you unpacked the turnaround for Edmonton these last 2 games? Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. It's been fantastic. You know, I think the biggest change has been the way Edmonton has rediscovered its defensive game. You know, everyone wants to make watch Connor McDavid do all of his fabulous things, but I think the way they've played in the defensive zone, the way they've been able to clog up the middle, keep Florida to the outside, really prevent them, for the most part, the last 2 games from getting in and getting their forecheck established. And then you add in the way Stuart Skinner's playing in goal. He looks like the Stuart Skinner who helped eliminate the Dallas Stars in the Western Conference Final. You know, I don't know if Edmonton is the better team, but I think right now they're playing the better style, I think, especially in the defensive zone. And that's what has kept us going in this series.
Adam, one of the biggest difference makers or differentiating factors has been that penalty kill for the Oilers, which came very close to breaking the 06 Ducks record of consecutive penalty kill. Finally, at the end of game 2, the Panthers broke through. But now at this point, having scored shorthanded goals in 2 consecutive games in the opener in game 5, it's become a weapon for them, whether it changes momentum with a kill or they score a goal. What does Paul Maurice need to do with his power play to combat this?
I think it just simplifies things and stop trying to force plays that aren't there. You know, sometimes the best power plays are the simplest ones where you just cross center line, dump it in deep, and rely on your forward to get down, get the heavy forecheck, and work on their puck retrievals and not worry about, you know, going horizontally through the middle of the ice. You know, I know that Florida likes to execute seam passes, especially on zone entries, but clearly Edmonton has been able to key on that. You saw the goal that they scored to open game 5, the Brandon Montour pass that got intercepted, and Connor Brown turned that into a goal. Those are the plays that have really been able to, that Edmonton has been able to sit on and turn against Florida. So simplifying the power play probably is the best way to go. Work on the edges, get it deep, allow your big, strong forwards to get down, get their forecheck going, and then they're able to set up and make the plays they need to make to be successful.
How important do you think it is for the Florida Panthers to score first in this game tonight? I know that in games past they had done a good job coming back, but it feels like Edmonton has a way of being able to sit on and protect a lead. We obviously saw that this past game when Florida was really pushing from midway through the second period on. It looked like if maybe we had another period that they could come through, but if you start off slow, it's really hard to claw your way back. How important is that early scoring?
Well, for sure. You know, it's the confidence that goes both ways. You know, Edmonton, the way they're playing defensively, the way Stuart Skinner has rediscovered his game, he feels like a just get me one, boys, and I'll be good. If Florida is able to get that first goal, you know, so much has gone wrong for them for the majority of the past, say, 2.5 games. If you go back to, you know, the third period of game 3 when Edmonton put their press on. You know, they need to get that first goal just to get their confidence going and to get them in the right mindset. I mean, I think at this point, if Florida can get a power play and not get scored on, that'll be a confidence booster for them right there. But yeah, getting the game's first goal is going to be vital. I know it's a little bit cliche, but getting that game's first goal is going to be vital to both teams just as far as how they're able to lay out and execute their game plan moving forward from that.
Florida came back home. They made the long 2,600-mile trip from Alberta. Family and friends there expecting to clinch the cup on home ice after having been dominant in the first 3 games of the series. They fell behind, got tight, got beat. The momentum's against them, but how much psychologically a factor is it that the expectations and all the narratives now are about how good Edmonton has been defensively, penalty kill, McDavid, a historic series, that they can play a little looser and with less pressure tonight on the road?
Well, I think, you know, there's going to be pressure no matter what. You know, you're in this situation. Like, if you go back to the beginning of the series and said, this is going to be a 3-2 series one way or the other, you would have said, yeah, that makes sense. The road that we took to get there, you know, was a little bit of a different path. So I think there's pressure both ways as far as where we've gotten and how we've gotten here. whether, you know, home, road, each team kind of is feeling it. You know, Florida wants to do it just to get it over with and start celebrating. Edmonton desperately wants to do it just to prolong their season and make it a game seven. So I don't know if one side is necessarily feeling more pressure than the other. I think it goes both ways.
Connor McDavid has scored or assisted on more than half the goals the Oilers have scored on this postseason run. He had 8 points over the last two games. No player has ever done that in Cup final history. He's breaking records. It feels like we never thought would be broken or weren't supposed to be broken. For you, is Conn Smythe his regardless of outcome in terms of who wins the final? How do you view that?
Yeah, I think at this point, you have to remember that it's for the entire postseason. It's not just for the Cup final, but it's a big deal when someone reaches 30 points in the Stanley Cup playoffs. McDavid's at 42, I believe. That's remarkable. You're entering into Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux territory. When you're there, you're the best player. You deserve the Conn Smythe. Whether your team wins or loses, you are without a doubt the best player in the playoffs right now. So, yeah, I don't envision anyone else winning that trophy right now. And I hope people are really taking a moment to appreciate what you're seeing with McDavid. In the final, yes, but just this entire run. You know, he's the best player in the league even before this playoff season started. What he's done is remarkable and elevate the best game in the league to an even higher standard. So, you know, it's wonderful that it's happening on this national scale where everybody who maybe isn't an Edmonton Oilers fan, who isn't, you know, in Mountain Time Zone, who gets to stay up and watch him, who doesn't really get a chance to appreciate the greatness of Connor McDavid, they're really getting a chance to see it now. And I hope people appreciate it because it doesn't happen very often what he's doing right now.
Adam, I'm going to ask you to look into your crystal ball and tell us how Game 6 plays out tonight.
Well, I don't know if you want my prediction, considering I said Panthers in 6, or I'm sorry, I said Oilers in 6 when the series began. So I don't know if I'm the best person to give predictions, but I think if you go back and you watch the third period, well, actually going back to the second and third period of Game 5, the way Florida was able to push and really make life difficult for the Oilers, I think that sort of momentum is something that the Panthers are going to have to really try to carry over. You know, I think you saw some of that happen the other way. Edmonton lost Game 3. They're the better team in the third period. And then you saw what happened in Games 4 and 5. I think what you saw towards the end of Game 5 with Florida, sort of, especially with Matthew Tkachuk kind of getting back to his game, I think that's what you're going to look for from Florida tonight in Game 6. And if I had to guess, I think the Panthers are going to be able to win it tonight, and they'll fly home with the Stanley Cup back to Florida.
I agree with that sentiment, but I do want to follow up with a question that Mike and I have gone back and forth on is, if the Panthers don't win tonight, is the series Edmonton's?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I think at that point, you know, I really still think when it comes down to it, I think Florida is the deeper team. I think Florida is the better team. At some point, you know, Stuart Skinner has been sensational through stretches in the series, but he's also the guy who had to get benched for two games in the second round against Vancouver because he couldn't stop a beach ball. Mm-hmm. So there's always that possibility that he could revert back to that, and Edmonton could lose what they've gotten in the defensive zone because they don't have the depth, and you're going back to Florida where they're going to have home ice. They're going to have the last change. They're going to have the matchup advantage if it gets to that game seven possibility. So I wouldn't say if it gets to a game seven, Edmonton's flying and Florida has no chance. I still think Florida is really in an advantageous spot to win the series.
Adam, you're awesome. We so appreciate your time today. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Anytime.
That's Adam Kimmelman, everybody. Make sure you follow him on X at NHL Adam K. Also, check out the NHL Draft Class podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Both teams, obviously, have proven that they can win on the road. 6 of the last 8 Cup winners have clinched on the road. So food for thought tonight as we get set for an important Game 6. Winner go home. Or I guess go back home for the Florida Panthers tonight. Either way, we're going to hit the break when we come back. We're resetting for hour two on the Lombardi Line, continuing our NHL talk and some NBA news. There's a new head coach with the Los Angeles Lakers. We'll be right back.